and we'll welcome Aisha and Catherine to the table. So our last formal session today is about the review of disclosures project. So this is part of our better communication again. And this particular work comes as a follow-up to our principles of disclosure discussion paper that we released and received extensive feedback on that the staff and the board have looked at. And as a result, we're doing what we're calling a standards level... Oh, sorry, I've got to get the words the right way around. A targeted standards level review of disclosures. And we selected two standards to look at, and we want to talk to you today about one of those, which is IAS 19, which is the employee benefits standard. And we want to show you some of the feedback that we've received, the staff have received in their various outreach initiatives, that suggests we should change the disclosure requirements in IAS 19. So if we were to make those changes, then what would that mean for taxonomy? How is the best way to model these new disclosures that we're considering for IAS 19? So I'm going to hand over to Aisha and Catherine, and I think Aisha's taking the floor, and she will take us through these slides, and we will look forward to your questions, please.
Yeah, thanks, Anne, and good afternoon, everyone. All right, so as Anne mentioned, so the last topic for today is all about disclosures. So in the first section of this presentation, I'll provide an update on the decisions that the board has made since we last met with you around this time last year, just to kind of provide the discussion we're going to be having today about employee benefits in context. And then perhaps more importantly, as Anne alluded to earlier, we'd really like to get your feedback or initial input on some example disclosures about employee benefits that we've heard from users to incorporate into IAS 19. So specifically, we'd be looking for your views on the three questions that are on slide two. So firstly, whether that example disclosure that we'd look at, if it can be effectively provided in both electronic reporting format and digital and paper-based formats. Secondly, keying in on electronic reporting, whether there are any issues in terms of providing that example disclosure in the electronic reporting format. So is it going to be difficult or complex to provide, and how would that tagging work in the IFRS taxonomy? And then finally, to get your views on whether the example disclosure represents what you perhaps have observed in practice today, which might allude to some sort of evidence of common practice for us to consider. So starting first with some background information, again, to put the decision today in context. So just as a reminder, what our project is aiming to do. So the board is aware of certain concerns about, you know, disclosures in financial statements, namely the three concerns that are on the slides. So not enough relevant information, too much relevant information. And when information is provided in the financial statements, it's usually communicated ineffectively. What we heard in terms of that, we call all of those problems essentially the disclosure problem. And what we heard is that there are many contributors to the disclosure problem, and in the same vein, it will take a number of stakeholders to resolve in it. So what the board did, what the board decided in last year was to acknowledge the way in which it contributes to that disclosure problem, and essentially to take steps to address the part that it plays. So what the board decided to do was to embark on a process of developing guidance for the way it develops and drafts disclosure objectives and requirements in the future, which I'll explain a little bit what that draft guidance entails and what the taxonomy role plays in that. But in addition to developing that guidance, what the board wanted to do, as Anne mentioned earlier, was to select two problem standards that we're aware of today to essentially test that draft guidance to make sure that the result that, you know, it would provide is what the board intended with this new draft process, if you will. So in May to September of last year, the board developed that draft guidance that I mentioned. And then after that, we started the process of applying the draft guidance into the selected IAS 19 and IFRS 13 standards. So the first step of that was really going and meeting with a lot of stakeholders, in particular users, to understand exactly what information they want about employee benefits, talk to other stakeholders about the cost of providing those items of information, just so the board can have this foundational information on which to start to make decisions about whether and how to make changes to the disclosure sections in those two standards. Perhaps the most important thing to highlight in this slide is that the board is going to start making technical decisions from July onward. So essentially our meeting with you today is really for us to be able to, you know, get input about electronic reporting issues, just so the board has that information as it embarks on the journey of making technical decisions about how it's going to change the disclosure sections of those standards. So really bringing taxonomy input at the forefront of the decisions that the board is set to make. As you'll see, all of this effort is going to go towards an exposure draft, which we're looking at in early 2020. So similar to what we did earlier today with the primary financial statement, we'll be looking at coming back around the exposure draft stage to look into the detailed modeling of whatever proposals that the board comes up with after going through that process. So as I mentioned earlier, so our past discussion with the ITCG was really looking at the research arm of this of the project, how the board should factor in technology and digital reporting in addressing the disclosure problem. And you provided us with a lot of valuable feedback. The overall consequence of that being that the board really needs to consider requiring disclosures in a way that are technology neutral. So appreciating the need for entities to be able to apply disclosure requirements irrespective of their eventual delivery format. So if they decide to take advantage of the new ways to communicate using technology to deliver that information, or if they continue to use PDF, which as you mentioned to us last time, is likely to remain at least in the medium term. So the need for the board to really make sure it has its technology neutral hat on in thinking about disclosures. So that feedback, in addition to other sets of feedback that the board received at the time, essentially factored into the draft guidance that the board has developed. And when we look at the draft guidance, we can, dissect it in three ways, really. So the first way is really decisions that the board has tentatively made in terms of effectively using disclosure objectives to explain why certain information is going to be useful to a primary user. So there the board is looking at using more specific and effective disclosure objectives in a way that will help entities better apply judgment in deciding what to disclose. The second aspect of the draft guidance is focusing on the process, so how the board is going to develop the content of disclosure objectives and requirements in the standards. There are a number of different aspects to this particular section, and a few of the key ones are indicated on the slides. So as I mentioned earlier, really looking at disclosure proposals early on in the standard setting process. I think what the board observed when it was making the decision was, too often today, disclosure considerations are often at the very end of a project. And, all of this effort is really trying to make sure that the board infuses considerations of disclosures throughout the process and as early on as possible. The second key aspect is really placing significant focus on the needs of stakeholders, in particular users, especially if the board is going to use disclosure objectives in a way to explain why information is useful to users. Then the board considers that it needs to critically understand what information users want, why they want that information, and the analysis that they want to perform with that information. And the example disclosures that we're going to look at a bit later are essentially the consequence of that piece of work that we've already done with employee benefits, which provided us a wealth of information in which to base those example disclosures on. And then finally, and perhaps most importantly for the group here, is really the way the board has decided to leverage the knowledge and expertise of the IFRS taxonomy team. We have that in more detail on the next slide, so I'll go through that once we get to that slide. And then finally, the third aspect of the draft guidance for the board is looking at communication. So, you know, ways in which the board can effectively communicate its intent with the disclosure objectives and requirements. So there we're looking at how to effectively balance the use of prescriptive language and non-prescriptive language and things like formatting and presentation and there. So the aspect of the process of improving the process of developing the content of disclosure objectives and requirements, a very key aspect of that is the interaction with the IFRS taxonomy. What the board considered in this section was that really, if we think about it, the IFRS taxonomy is essentially the first go at implementing any disclosure proposals that the board puts in place. So that itself was you know, one of the things the board considered in terms of making sure that, you know, the feedback from the IFRS taxonomy team is really at the forefront of how he thinks about disclosure requirements. So they're, you know, contacting the IFRS taxonomy team and really working with the ITCG as well to understand issues with current disclosure objectives and requirements. So what are the issues with the status quo? That in itself can inform maybe holes that are currently existing in disclosure sections of the standard and look at where the board can stick to make improvements. And then when we graduate towards, you know, having disclosure proposals, then really trying to understand what electronic reporting issues are with those proposals, whether they can be effectively incorporated in the IFRS taxonomy. So are they clear enough for the relevant taxonomy elements to be incorporated? And what the interaction between those proposals are with common reporting practice, because that in itself can indicate perhaps some useful information that's not addressed in the proposals itself. So quite a bit of detail on here, but you know what this is getting at is really making sure the board ensuring that input from the IFRS taxonomy is infused throughout the process of thinking about disclosures from the very beginning in terms of before even thinking about the solutions to take to make sure that, you know, they're considering the input from the IFRS taxonomy as part of that journey towards understanding the problem to eventually creating the solution to incorporate in the standard itself. So before going into the application of this draft guidance to IAS 19 and the questions we have for you, I want to pause here to see if there are any reactions, comments to the board's draft guidance before continuing further.
Does the framework then take into account helping the board with, when you put this in an electronic format, the accounting meaning of what they're trying to require gets lost or you know, I mean, because that's the key part with when you go from paper. Well, it's the key part anyway, but it gets really acute in the electronic world. What do you mean, this number 7, what does it mean that you've just put from your machine to my machine? So is the framework going to help, perhaps, the board realize or maybe they're the meaning of what they're trying to convey, not just why, mm-hmm. but the what, I guess?
Yes, and I think a lot of that is what is in that top right corner of the slide, so looking at whether it can be effectively incorporated into the IFRS taxonomy. So thinking about that early before it's actually incorporated in the IFRS taxonomy is going to help the board, you know, and the IFRS taxonomy team likewise think about, you know, those issues early on and whether some of those issues are reflective of the way in which it would be written to see if we can maybe be clearer in those instances or if it's, you know, actually in terms of the way it would be presented, perhaps thinking about those issues early on and trying to see how we can resolve them so we have more time before implementation. But yes, certainly a lot of that is part of why this is at the forefront as opposed to, you know, a bit later on than is the case today.
Ashok.
I think this way. So each IS standard or IFRS standard have special paragraph, disclosure and presentations. Mm-hmm. So if you think about the taxonomy, where it's coming from, is coming from standard, right? So I expect at minimum, and if you look at each and every standard disclosure and presentation, it talks in a more principled way rather than kind of the granular way. Taxonomy, on the other hand, really about a lot of granular level. I expect in some point in time, you know, the kind of a futuristic thing, at least must be within that disclosure and presentation paragraph, if it is possible, at least minimum, you know, the kind of the granular level or more defined. then taxonomy will really help a great deal, and the interaction, as one of your, you know, the point is, right now, very little, because it's sort of principle-based. So that could be my, that would be my suggestions, that include a little bit more detail in that particular paragraph of presentation and disclosure.
Jack.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your comment. The one thing I just want to make a comment is the our disclosure project, the one of the purpose of our disclosure project is to make clear the disclosure objective. So therefore, we are trying to make a guide for the board, and we have to make clear the each one of the disclosure, what is the objective, to clarify it. And then at the same time, we are saying that we need to communicate with the taxonomy team. The reason why we need to communicate is, in my understanding, mainly because we need to identify what is the duplication across the other disclosures in other standards, and also the inconsistency with the other disclosures. So therefore, what we have to do is we have to make clear what the objective is, and then make clear, is there any inconsistency or this duplication across the standards. So that is the one of the main purpose to communicate with the taxonomy team. Having said that, if we could go down this slice route, so it may mislead that, here comes the example of the new disclosure. So then what kind of taxonomy is possible? So this is, as Ashok pointed out, it may go down to the too much detail rather than principle basis. So that's the fear I felt after reading this slide. So I think I wouldn't say it's too early to have a comment with each detailed example. Having said that, having the comment to the example is not really the purpose. The purpose of the having a communication with taxonomy team and the specialist for taxonomy is to make clear that what is the real objective of these standards, and then if that is the case, what is the most common taxonomy should be. So therefore, we should be careful not to go into too much detail. Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck.
Having seen that for several years, ISB seems always avoiding to discuss details when discussing about standards at the early stages. But at the same time, it's quite difficult to sharing what is objective without any details at example. So that I can understand what Tak said, but at the same time, it's quite difficult if the many countries is coming to in IFRS. But if you during your discussing only several countries or before adopting IFRS, maybe it's okay. But now it's many countries adopt IFRS, and I have to thinking about how we should disclose and how we can use this. So that maybe I don't know why you still avoiding to discuss details, but you don't need to use all example, but maybe during this discussion, maybe you need some more detailed example, and then sharing to the preparer side and user side what's happened in this disclosure coming. This is something that I always think about.
I wasn't sure if there was a question in there, or was
opinion what Tak said. At the same time, that it's like a questions about the discussions of the taxonomy. I want to the discussion of taxonomy at the same timing of the new standard. Because maybe taxonomy can help you to, at the same time, help you, ISB side, to thinking about what this new standard will affect on the preparer side and the user side. So, because taxonomy is now currently only one somehow the framework to communicate with real user and preparer for ISB. Because in case of the regulator in some countries, regulator, and the local gap, usually they create a disclosure framework at the same as when they're making new standards together. But you can't make a disclosure framework under the regulations. So maybe taxonomy can only one tool to discuss and thinking about what happened on a new standard will be the effect on the usage of the data and also the preparers.
So, are you saying you'd be interested in having input at an earlier stage of the standard setting process?
As Tak said, that the prepared discussing about more using about example, because without an example is also discussing about taxonomy needs example. Mm-hmm. So that I'm connecting each other. So sorry, I'm skipping you so that it makes you confused.
No, that's fine. I was just going to say, one of the elements of the guidance, which is essentially the board thinking about how it can do things better in future, is precisely to explore the idea of seeking advice from taxonomy experts, our taxonomy team, at an earlier stage for precisely the reasons you describe. The position we are at the moment with the testing of these two particular standards is that we had to spend a period of time understanding our starting position in terms of what is the ideal information before we can then expand to other stakeholder types to talk to about that. So really the purpose of this conversation is to share some examples with you and get some initial feedback. But to the extent that there is an even more useful way that different stakeholder groups will be able to provide feedback, identifying those things is exactly the kind of benefit of the testing process, so that in future we know how to do things better still. So that is really useful feedback for us.
I hope you remember when you were first time to provide taxonomy and standard together, IS7, at that time someone find discussing about taxonomy, and someone found that this explanation about standard was not clear what this standard require company to disclose, so that taxonomy can help those kind of communication.
I remember the feedback we got on IS7 that some investors and even CIMAC said if you're a more data-centric user, just see the data model gives you a better idea of the presentation and disclosure requirements. There are just two different types of users. You have users who like read more the narrative and it makes sense, and you have users who are more data-centric and will see the logical data model and that makes more sense for me. So it's like an aid to visualize the presentation and disclosure requirements without changing the presentation and disclosure requirements.
And maybe I needed to back to what Tak said, and Tak said that somehow like avoiding to discuss details the beginning stages, but I think sometimes it's necessary to discuss detail levels.
Yeah. So moving on to employee benefits. So as I mentioned, we've done quite a lot of detailed user outreach that essentially established that most of the disclosures that users see on the basis of IAS 19 today are not really meeting their objectives of analyzing employee benefits. So they would like to see things about the cash flow effects and better disaggregation of the amounts in the primary financial statement. On the flip side, we've heard from preparers that many of the disclosures they have to prepare today are difficult or complex to prepare. So sensitivity analysis is a common one in terms of that feedback. And preparers do understand users' need for improved information about cash and would support that. So taking all of that feedback into consideration, the board is essentially looking to explore new or different information about employee benefits that would effectively meet the objectives of both users and preparers. I touched on this earlier, so essentially the feedback that we get from you today is really just going to serve as early input to the board in terms of electronic reporting considerations for them to think about as we develop recommendations and the board makes decisions on the basis of those. We also want to point out that the IFRS taxonomy team, we've also, you know, started the process of our common practice review in the same way as we did for IFRS 13 in that sense. So your feedback today is really going to also provide us complementary information from the common practice perspective in that sense. So diving into the disclosure examples that we'd like to discuss today. So there are four disclosure examples that we've prepared. And to reiterate again, these are example disclosures based on the feedback that we've heard from users. And they essentially represent areas that are not required by IAS 19 today or not fully addressed in the way that the example presents in IAS 19 today. So we'd be looking for your feedback on the three key questions that are on slide 12, so which is looking at whether the example is technology neutral in the way it's presented, and if not, what changes you would suggest to make sure that we can cater to both needs. Secondly, you know, what electronic reporting issues you can see with this example disclosure. And then finally, if you're aware of whether it interacts with common practice today. So starting first with the example on slide 13, which is an example on wider sensitivity analysis. So wider sensitivity in the sense of covering interrelationships between the key assumptions today. So if you're aware of the sensitivity analysis that's typically provided by entities today and required by IS-19, it's really focusing on one assumption at a particular time. What we've heard from users is they would quite like the sensitivity analysis to cover interrelationships between the key assumptions and then also to provide more wider deviations from the base case that's in the financial statement. So I'll pause here to see if you have any comments on any of the three questions as it relates to this example.
For the people who are involved in tagging, do you see, like, when you tag the sensitivity analysis for LP benefits, did you see a lot of these correlations? How did you deal with it? Was it easy? Anything you had there?
Mm-hmm. Have you considered work by FASB, what they do in that area, as far as the disclosures and presentations and various, you know, the kind of the line level kind of the disclosure?
Yes, we have. Sorry, I didn't know if you were carrying on.
No, what I'm saying that, you know, the work by FASB for the US GAAP, I think, in the same area, but to look at it, I think, in terms of like all the discount rate valuations and, you know, the basis point, I think, my memory serves me correct. I think they got pretty good, you know, the work plan and, you know, the whole thing related to this particular area. I think worth to have a look at it.
Yeah, they have. So they have also been working on a substantial disclosure project over the last few years, and they interestingly and separately did pick the same two topics to look at. So we have sort of spent some time with them looking at the decisions they made and why, to the extent that they relate to the feedback that we've heard and such. What is actually proving to be the case is that there's a lot more crossover with our other topic, which is fair value measurement, because the two boards actually started from the same place. But with regard to both, we actually have a joint board meeting next month at which the two boards will be discussing together their experiences in these areas. So it's definitely on the table for discussion.
Good. Copy and paste.
We are going to discuss each cases, or after the just look at the five cases?
Oh, no, one, two, three, four cases.
Okay. I mean, to the extent that, you know, no one has comments on example one, we're very happy to move on.
We've got Donna's got a comment.
Just a question. So in terms of the sensitivity that's open to the company to provide what values of percentages, or is that prescriptive?
No. So the sort of base of the feedback was around the fact that users told us when they just get the effect of one movement on one assumption in isolation, they felt that wasn't giving them a full story because one assumption is never going to move in isolation, and what they almost wanted was to understand how the different assumptions would interact with each other, particularly in a case where, for example, the movement wasn't linear, where one sensitivity would not give them everything they need to know. So the particular disclosure that is in the example is a suggestion that came to us from a couple of sources that would address the different things that users had identified as potential improvements. So we've used this as a way that companies might deal with that feedback, and are using it as a source of discussion. So it's not that it's intended to be prescriptive in terms of the key assumptions for any company or the width of the analysis for any company. It would be, you know, there would be judgment in those areas. It's more about reflecting the feedback we had about non-linear assumptions and interaction between assumptions.
So, and I guess I'm just wondering, comparabilities between companies, though, if the sensitivity, you know, has a narrower sensitivity band versus a wider, how comparable they would be.
I guess a concern,
and then I know you're not getting into the modeling, but it just, does that provide what users are looking for if they're not that comparable, or is it really just targeted to that particular company?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, what we have heard from some users is that if, for example, we asked every company to give the same percentage movement on the same assumption, and it was just, you know, the one number, so to speak, for a lot of users, they would say that, well, you know, that doesn't tell us if that's a realistic scenario for that company, and therefore is this representing a real risk exposure that we need to think about. So there is definitely a balance to be found, because there are some drawbacks with forcing straight comparability in this area. So it's, yes, one of the things we're
balancing both.
G.
Yeah, I think that it's not place to discuss about IAS 19 itself. So that I trying to say about the more common issue about this kind of footnote disclosures. Usually people pick up to this kind of data, discount rate date from the you know, disclosed reports. And that's not so many places that take that kind of data from the data aggregator. Even data aggregator, sometimes it's quite difficult. But if standard setter say, just to say that the company, you should disclose the discount rate, it's usually company writing on this number in the narrative, you know, the long story, inside of the story, and it's difficult, it's tough to take this kind of data. And I hope that the someone tagging on someone prepare a tag or such kind of ratio, but it's not directly related from financial statements. So that we hope to get such kind of data from the report more correctly. I mean, more, you know, that no mistake, no error, pick up to that kind of data directly. But currently, not so many countries, XBRL, doesn't have a, you know, the doesn't have such kind of tags on the tax lines. So this kind of footnote disclosure is very much useful. But if you, I hope you provide such kind of the example so that company can write on this kind of data in the table, and it's getting to useful to take this data more correctly. And then next, maybe it's better to prepare a tag. It's easy to prepare a tag for tag for that kind of data. And there are many people still worry about how such kind of tag on the which kind of how they can put this tag on the location with the taxonomy. But I want to more flexible discussions, even though the outside of the financial statement.
I just have the comment that this would be complex to tag. I'm sure we could figure out a way, but it wouldn't be easy, and it would be seems messy because there's two assumptions happening at the same time. So,
would it make sense to tag? Would it be just text block tagging enough for this type of information?
I think if
you don't have to worry too much about
right.
it.
I think if it's important enough for the board to say to disclose it, it's important enough to tag it. In other words, it must be important information. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'd go with tagging the numbers, but Yeah, it would require changing of the way we tag it now. Mm-hmm. Because there's two assumptions. So.
Dirk.
Yeah, I can just agree. Just going through the examples, I mean, part of it, it's quite easy. It's straightforward, like a discount rate. I mean, that's something we would not expect a lot of extension. But whenever it comes to like a combination of, I would say, company-specific text and tables, and where you have to describe something like in the example on page 14, like these payment schedules, we would expect a lot of variety between companies because that's not kind of standard disclosure you're here presenting. So we would expect that this is probably always different from company to company. I mean, the deficit, something like that. So it really depends, I would say. The deficit, you would say this is kind of mandatory disclosure, so that's kind of standardizing. Then next page on 15, the graph. I mean, that's very interesting how you attack that graph and also those plan participants. I mean, paper-based, very easy, but from a taxonomy perspective, this will create a lot of extension, of course, yeah, because it's probably between companies always different. So I can just summarize, it depends really upon the kind of disclosure in the example. So but I would compare it with others like the goodwill impairment or goodwill litigation. These would be also kind of disclosure where we see right now high extension rate, and that's something we would expect also, or I would expect for this kind of disclosure to have more than the usual extension rate.
Suzanne.
This is just on the example one. A thought that occurred to us is just sort of, you know, talking to the Christines and the Adrians and then frontline analyst investors, would they want to electronically consume this and update a model with it? Or is it, again, information they read and that helps them just come up with their haircut for how they're looking at things? And so.
Aisha, would you like to go to you?
Yes, so turning to example two, which is on the expected contributions into the plan. So here, users are looking for information to help them understand how an entity intends to manage any existing pension deficit. So here we have an example that essentially provides textual descriptions of how the entity intends to manage that, and then essentially like a schedule of expected contributions, which would represent the future cash inflows into the plan from the entity. So again, your views on those three questions as it relates to this example disclosure.
Perhaps I should check the call altogether and see for any additional comments.
Yeah, sure. So we can take all the four example disclosures together. I'm happy to provide any further explanation in each example if it's needed, but we would welcome your thoughts on all the example disclosures if there are any electronic reporting issues that you see with those examples. I know Dirk mentioned a couple already, but would be keen on any and every view that you have.
Just one more. So sorry. Just one more. Our objective of this proposed project is to make clear the disclosure objective, so that we can help prepare us to exercise the materiality judgment. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we faced was the behavior of preparers of checkbox, satisfaction style. So. As long as there is a checkbox behavior, we cannot improve the quality of the disclosure. We rather want preparer to exercise the materiality judgment. So therefore, in order for us to make preparer make materiality judgment, we would like to make clear the objective. But the question is, if preparer make exercise the materiality judgment based on the objective basis, then the, here comes the difficulty with the taxonomy issues, because taxonomy issues is something like checkbox style, and if some data is missing, so the user would, or especially data aggregator thinks something is missing. But it is missing because they exercise the materiality judgment. We have to make clear that to what extent the data provided through the taxonomy is accurate in terms of materiality basis, so that the users can exercise judgment based on the materiality judgment the preparer made. So that is the challenge. So therefore, those are the issues we would like to have a view from the experts of taxonomy area. So that is the comment I wanted to make, because the message, if I am right, the message in this slide deck was not quite clear, so that simply what kind of view that you want to provide for this example was not very, very clear. So that's why I wanted to make a comment.
I cannot what you said. I think this is quite a long discussion what we have been doing with the preparer and the investor side. This kind of disclosure, especially the example too, is quite difficult, because if I want to understand company situation, I have to read all of this the explanations, and then somehow. If I really wanted to make sure this company is okay or not, we need to put the data, pick up to such kind of data from this sentence, and then writing some the putting this number on Excel sheet, like Excel sheet, and so that because just gauging this kind of the stories, how can I make sure this is okay or not? So that the materiality are also important, and the company doesn't need to have same disclosure, but like a box checking disclosure. But at the same time, company side need to understand how user side can understand this kind of disclosure, and maybe company also checking data when they are checking data, putting those data on the somehow table styles. So the disclosure is. I think a long journey to this better disclosure and better objective. But maybe it's good to share the experience, company side also, company management side. Can you really understand and then checking the data using this, the disclosure styles or not? So company also, if company side also think about this, maybe we can share which data should be tagged or not. Because tag, always we don't need to tag on all data, but the tagging discussion, taxonomy discussion is helps us to make sure each meaning of each data. So that maybe we can use taxonomy to which data should be shared with company and investors. And also that how investor side, outsider, think about to when they look at this kind of information, is this really useful for handling outsider or not? Because usually table style is better than understand.
And I think it's fair to say that the examples that the team have developed here have been developed as a result of conversations with users of financial statements about the sorts of information that they would like to see in these sorts of scenarios. And we have tested these examples with users as well to say, look, if this sort of information was provided, is this the sort of thing that you were looking for? And the feedback that we've very much had has been very positive. It's been saying, yeah, this is exactly the sorts of information that we want. we take it that this information is perhaps not as prescriptive as some of the other things, but the feedback we've definitely had from users is that this is useful, this is the sort of information that they want. And certainly it's maybe not the sort of information that you're going to be pulling individual numbers from, because it's going into way more detail. I think it's the sort of information that you would my view is you potentially want to look at the entire note to be able to understand it. But that's the sort of context for what we've been doing here. Did you want to add anything, Catherine?
Yeah. Before that, I think I'm so surprised that this five example is this. I think all the example is meant to be very useful. First of all, I would like to say that about that, because when we are thinking about the IS-19, I try to connect this to thinking about the disclosure. How can I say, how disclosure objective? So that I use this example as the just a story and the tables. Mm-hmm. So but before that, as IS-19 disclosure, all these five example is very much useful.
No, and I would like to say, because you say, I think your last sentence is key to me. It's like about narrative and it's about tables. What you're really telling me, okay, there's a lot of narrative which you can just make easy accessible through a text block, but there is also some commonality. Like I would say, for instance, mm-hmm. the future payments in to cover deficits, I could easily structure that in my taxonomy with some kind of data model, and I would expect probably quite a few companies which may disclose that information if material to them. So you really, it's to find that balance between the narrative and the amount of structured tagging that is required, and that's why I pick up from Chi there. So we need to consider that. So when we talk about the taxonomy, we should really have conversations with users that use electronic tag data. Okay, what information do you want to see tagged? How would you structure the information? What information is just enough to become narrative? And so far, we haven't had enough of this conversation. And I see Suzanne.
Suzanne's ready, but I think Kyle is first, and then absolutely. Suzanne.
Let's put ourselves in the shoes of an investor and an entity. And of course, I'm very interested in the future expectations of the company as published by the company. And that's what we're looking at here, whether it's risk exposure through sensitivity analysis, or whether it's contributions or payments from a plan. And as an investor, one of the things I'm going to be quite keen about is what's changed from last quarter to this quarter, or from last year to this year. Mm-hmm. So let's think about it at the taxonomy side then. So from a taxonomy perspective, these are largely company-specific extensions. To answer your question here, Anthony, the advice, how can you model the aspects that are in the IFRS taxonomy to encourage those that are preparing those company-specific extensions from one period to another to do so in such a way that it's common to still allow you to do that comparative analysis, because that's what's important to you. It's not cross entities, no, it never will be, but it is as an entity.
Thank you. Suzanne?
In a way, I'm just going to rehash what everyone said, but because it's clear that there's really usable information in here. This is a brilliant example. It's clear you talk to real users. The question is the balance of which things really need to be ingested electronically, and which things are, even if it's a number, is useful. But again, they use it to come up with an estimate, a haircut to the valuation, or to tweak their models. But which things really do they need to feed right into their valuation model? And that sounds like a next step discussion that will be really useful.
Can I add a bit more about what I said before? So that maybe this project is brilliant, but if we add a little more, sometimes of the company starting to disclose, the data will be more useful. So that just only a few changes about the disclosure example sometimes help to more the communication. So that I wanted to say like that. Sometimes it's very much, very, very, that great. But at the same time, for example, the company saying about 3 years things, sometimes difficult or missing to look at the understanding. But sometimes if at the beginning point, if this example a little bit different, the company can more you know, easy to disclose. And the disclosure become much more easy to understand. It's such kind of things happened before. So that just I wanted to say like that.
Thank you. Staff, do you have any more questions for the group?
I think that was all the questions we have. Thank you very much.
Good. Thank you. So this brings us to the end of our public meeting. So we thank our observers and ask that they leave. We are scheduled for a short break before our final session, which is quite a short session. So can I have an indication whether you would like a 10-minute break or would you like to continue? Those who'd like to continue, can I have a show of hands?